Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Comic Chronicle Podcast. I'm your guys' host, Dakota Morgan, coming to you from Phoenix, Arizona. And of course, as always, this is a Nerd with Balls production. So I want to say, everyone, thanks for tuning into this episode. We have a really fun guest. Jason Copeland is on the show. Jason talks about a lot of cool things. He talks about, you know, really working on being a writer and artist on his all new book coming out that we talk about. We also talk about The Kill All Monsters, Daredevil that he worked on. You know, we talk about a lot of stuff and getting up and going out there and going for it and doing what you want to do and being more than just what that one thing you think you are. And, you know, a lot of selfness on there, like so many things here in this episode. You guys are really, really going to enjoy it. If you guys want to follow me, you can follow me at DakotaMorgan3 on Twitter or at Dakota_Morgan97 on Instagram. I forgot to say that at the end of the show. So right there, if you guys want to follow me and more information on the podcast. But if you want to support the podcast, which, you know, it's often nice to get it a little bit, to say the least, to you guys, if you guys leave a review on whatever you're listening on, and you can subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or comiccronicle.podbean.com. We are definitely, we love hearing reviews from you guys. If you guys have really fun reviews or fan art too, I want to put this in this episode. Email us. You can email your reviews of the show at filmworld97@gmail.com. Or if you have fan art of the show or just fan art in general you'd like to get promoted, email it to filmworld. That's filmworld97@gmail.com. It's filmworld because this is also included in the Film World podcast, if you guys listen to that I host. So it's really a mutual thing. If you guys have reviews, you can email there, or fan art, you can email them there. We'll definitely promote it, guys, and I'll read it at the top of the next show. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in to this episode, and instead of me rambling on for a little bit more, I'm going to get us started on my interview with Jason Copeland.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, we're recording now. Jason, before we get started on it, because I do want to touch upon what we just talked about, welcome to the show, man.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, of course. Like, I saw your work, and I saw you on Twitter and whatnot, too, and you're a really cool dude, and I'm like, okay, Jason's got to be on the show. But we talked about something really interesting here right beforehand, and I hope to, like, okay. I just got done watching Crisis on Infinite Earths, like, parts, oh, shit, 3 or 4 right now, or 4 and 5, one of the two.
Right.
Really, really, really great for DC, really, really cool things. And I saw so much negative fanfare on it, but I watch it, and I'm like, holy shit, this is really, really good. And it's like, what are y'all smoking? Like, this is the stuff we always said we wanted. They're like, no, it's evil. I'm like, fuck off, Palpatine. Like, get the hell out of here. But so fandom, dude, I want to touch upon that with you because I don't really get to touch upon that with too many people on the show. Like, fandom.
Sure, yeah.
Do you believe, now, hot take by Jason right now, do you believe it's kind of got fandom, especially in comics, has kind of gotten a little bit toxic?
Yeah, definitely, for sure. I actually kind of stepped away from Twitter for a while there when the whole Comicsgate thing was going on, because there's just so much negativity. Everyone was posting so many negative things about everybody and books and, you know, all that sort of their hot takes on things. And after a while, I just had to step away. This is too much. There's too much negativity out there. And I mean, yeah. It rolls over to everything. It's not just comics too, right? And I, like we were saying, I just hope that people would talk more about the things that they love than the things that they hate, because I get really tired of all the negativity.
Amen to that, man. Amen, because there's two things out there. Like, Star Wars, that started a while back. Comics, it started a little bit ago. But I think what really showed me lately, and this is really late, like in the past 2 months, I want to say, maybe even a little bit before one of them, is the Jurassic Park fandom and the Godzilla fandom. Those got toxic, and I'm like, holy shit, we've been at a bad time in society, folks, because these were the things I could escape into, and everyone's like, peace and love and fandom, and then now they're like, you piece of shit. Like, wait a minute here. What's going on? What is happening?
I don't know. I'm not dialed in enough to on certain subcultures like that, but yeah, it just in general, people just seem to... it's like they've lost their ability to accept things. That everything has to be grounded in a reality, and it has to be explained, and it has to make sense. And some people just can't switch off that their need for everything to be laid out perfectly. And you can pick apart anything, really. And for people to get so upset about little things or even big things, like, you know, just let it go.
It's true.
Not that big of a deal. Yeah.
It's true. I mean, holy shit, if we could just turn off, like, that adult sense of thing. I mean, if I don't really have it, so there's that. But, you know, I can't really turn off the adultness if the inner childhood just runs the steam engine. That is my career at this point. But, you know, if we can just turn it. Yeah, you're laughing because I think you agree on this one.
Yeah, well, the sense of disbelief, I think, is the thing that people can't suspend. It's one of those things where sometimes you just need to let go and let things wash over you.
It's true. Oh, it's true. Oh, yeah. Like, I literally have a book on this right now, and it's a comic out that's telling it in, like, a weird kind of adventure-y sort of thing, but, like, always keeping that inner child alive despite who may want to kill it. Like, that's something that's a book right now, and people are really digging that. So,
well, that's cool.
Yeah, I try. And it's a cool comic. I mean, it's based off an idea I had when I was a kid of a world I used to escape into. It's called The Unpowerer at SGGS Comics if you want to read it. So, that's one of the many things I'm writing at the moment, but. Yeah, like, I think that's something that people don't really, really, really try to do anymore is that sense of disbelief. But do you think we can ever get back to a time where we can just turn it off and we can be like, oh, my God, did you see that giant lizard versus the giant monkey? It's like, yes, I did, and it was awesome. Not like, how the hell are they standing on top of an aircraft carrier? Like, well, you know what? Just fuck it.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. It's the same with politics. I don't think...
That's a thing, yeah.
Everyone's taken one side or the other side, and there's no middle ground. There seems to be no discussion and no real ability to listen. I honestly don't think, not to sound super negative, but I honestly don't think that we're getting back from that. That's going to be the reality forever, I think.
No. I mean, we always say that, but then we're like, oh, yeah, there was a long time of darkness, like the bubonic plague. No one thought shit was going to end.
I mean, in my lifetime.
Oh.
Forever.
You're not that older than me, though. You're like in your, what, late 20s, I'm going to take a guess here?
No.
Oh, fuck.
I wish I was.
We can pretend. If it's in the 30s, then okay, it's fine. I mean, that's
We'll just leave it at that.
Wait, what happened today? Well, man, you know what? I went on a show, and I just, like, realized my age. I was like, oh, fuck.
Oh, yeah, no, it's not this show that made me realize it.
Oh, what show was it, then, if you don't mind?
I've been realizing it for a long time.
Oh. You're like, oh, fuck, yeah, that mirror in the morning. You know that mirror? Yeah.
Yeah, there was a moment when I turned 25 when I woke up and I was like a 60-year-old man.
I'm 22 with that, going on 23 with like the 80-year-old body that's falling apart. So, I mean, you know.
I pushed myself pretty hard in my 20s, and then one day I woke up and that was it.
Yeah. Fair enough. Now, kind of going back in time a little bit, man, because I do want to touch upon it. Because if you've listened to any episodes of the show, I always like to talk about people's origin stories because... they're always important, no matter what you think about it. Like, I think mine's complete bullshit, yet people want me on TED Talk, so there's that. But it's such a weird yin-yang. But, like, how did you get started in being an artist? Was it something you kind of did when you were a kid? Was it something that, you know, you went through in your 20s to be? Because if you're in your age that you're in right now, which I'm not going to say, but I'm not going to try to guess, is... you know, there was a time when you started years ago that it was maybe a little bit more easier, some say a little bit more difficult to where we go now, which I've talked about freelance art with people on here before, and it seems difficult. But, like, how did you get started in this crazy world of the arts?
Yeah, well, I guess I started pretty much as a kid drawing a lot. It was one of those things where, you know, being good as a kid gave you a certain status among other kids, so... you know, you kind of fed off that feedback of other kids really liking your stuff. So I draw Star Wars things, you know.
Fair. That's a good way to get in with everybody. They're like, look at this dude. He draws Vader. Like, oh, shit.
Yeah, I draw TIE Fighters. I usually drew, like, these big scenes. And, I mean, they were horrible. But I used to draw these big scenes of, like, you know, the TIE Fighters coming in and all the X-Wings and stuff. And kids would just really, they really think it was cool. And so it just kind of fed off that. And then, you know, once you get into high school and you realize that, you know, I could take English or chemistry and do a lot of homework, or I could take art and get praised for it. So I thought, well, art is the way to go. I don't know if I ever really thought of it as a career path. It was more just an easier way to kind of gain status and not do a lot of homework.
Fair. I mean, so you were doing it because you're like, okay, this is a really good escape, and people are going to like me for it. Awesome.
Pretty much. Pretty sad. Pretty shallow.
I mean, no, I mean, you know what, though? I hear you're like the 1% of people, Jason. I'm not going to lie, because I've never heard anybody say, oh, yeah, I was an artist, and, you know, it really upgraded my status within everybody. Usually here, I was an artist, and, you know, they put my head on the fucking toilet, like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it was weird. My high school actually, everyone got along really well, and although there was a sports, I'm in Canada, I live in Vancouver, Canada, so.
Okay, that explains it.
So sports wasn't really that big of a thing. Like, we didn't have a football team, oh. We had a basketball team, but, you know, it was all regional, and so the athletes had their own status, but everyone really got along really well. So, you know, the jocks or whatever, all the little cliques, they never really had a problem with art kids. So, you know, me being able to do interesting drawings to them and be able to socialize, it just kind of all added up. Like, it was nothing that I had to hide or anything.
Dude, there's so many people listening right now and myself that are like, wow, we wish we went to your damn school. Like, there's so many of us.
Yeah. People look back or think back on their high school years and say, oh, it was hell. I hated it. But I actually honestly thought it was a great time.
So let me guess. You went to the class reunion. You're like, hey, guys. And they're like, fuck you. And I was like, oh, okay.
No, I've been to a couple. Most of the people, it wasn't a very big class. Like, the school wasn't very big. So my graduating class was about 110 people or something.
Oh, shit.
And I probably still keep in contact with about 40, 50 of them. So
holy hell.
Going back to my reunion was more like just going to a party.
Is it the Canadian way? I don't mean to sound countryist right now, but is it the Canadian?
I don't know. I honestly think that my school kind of fell into this weird sort of bubble where everyone got along and there wasn't a whole lot of strife. And so everyone was friends with everyone, really. I can't really speak for other places. I imagine that our school was an anomaly.
Yeah, I'm going to say yours was the Stephen King, like, weirdo school that all of a sudden things were too good at. Secretly, we don't know that there was a cult there that maybe you didn't know about. I was like, all right, sacrifice.
Yeah, they definitely had problems before I was in high school. Like, that school had problems. And then when I left, like, after I graduated, the school started having problems too. So it was like this weird sort of, spot in time where everything just kind of worked out for us.
Very nice. So you went on from there to...
Well, then I took a year off, and then I decided that I didn't like working at a butcher shop. So I applied at Alberta College of Art at the ACA in Calgary. It was the only school I applied to, and I applied to late, and I was freaked out because I didn't think, what happens if they don't take me? I have to stay at this job. And luckily they took me, so I went off to Calgary for a couple years, and then so I was still in the comics at that point. And then when I got to art school, the art school mentality was that comics were low art and not worth your time or effort.
Really?
Yeah, and so it was sort of systematically pushed out of me. So in those couple of years, I stopped even reading comics and really caring about comics. And it took me almost 10 years before I kind of picked it up and started working on it again. So there was like this weird gap of time where I thought, well, I'll be like a gallery artist. I took like studio courses, drawing mostly. Try to be more like the arty type. I figured out that there was so much bullshit in that field. Like, the galleries choose who they want. It's not necessarily based on talent. Yeah. I mean, most things aren't. But at the same time, you know, you had this, I was young and I felt like, oh, you know, I do this work. I think it's really strong.
And I'm a god. You had that god thing going. You're like, oh, I am powerful. Like, holy shit. I'm like, I'm above it. Not above everyone else. But you're like, this is like really, really cool. Like, there's nothing that could like, oh, this is an awesome community sort of thing. When you're younger, you thought of this or?
Well, I, think that the art community in Calgary was pretty strong in terms of gallery stuff, but I moved back to Vancouver and it was cutthroat. It was horrible. It was pretty bad. Because I actually finished up here in Vancouver. I took a couple years in Calgary and then I moved out to Vancouver, back to Vancouver, and finished at the Emily Carr School of Art or whatever it was called. And I almost quit actually in my fourth year, right at the end of the first semester. I only had one semester left to go. I was just like, I'm done.
Wow.
I don't want to do this anymore. Because I just realized that it was just all bullshit.
Yeah.
A lot of the talent, quote-unquote talent, wasn't like the producing of the work. It was the theory of the work.
Mm.
And so it was one of those things where I didn't want to be part of that anymore. And then my drawing teacher, Carol Mazevich, she was like, well, what do you want to do, in the last semester?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, I want to make a film. So she said, okay, go ahead and make a film. And so for the last semester of my term, I didn't draw or make any real, traditional art. I made a film.
Shit. Which,
yeah, which was fun. And got me my grades and I got through school, but I was done with that whole thing. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I don't blame you because that is a whole different type of culture there. It sounds like the world hits you fucking hard, dude. Like
No. It was just one of those things where you come to the realization that, you know, you put 4 years into it or 3.5 years into it and you realize I don't want to be here anymore. Like, this is just not what I want to do. That was roughly around the time where I started to realize, like, oh, comic books are actually pretty cool still. And I was starting to formulate my own thing. Because, I mean, I went into art school pretty young, like, you know, only a year out of high school. So
that's pretty young, yeah.
And your mind gets molded by these teachers who, you know, you look up to and you sometimes think what they say is gospel. So when all of them are telling me that comic books are worthless and not worth my time, I ended up believing them for a chunk. So, so it kind of derailed me for a while, but I managed to get back onto it after being at art school for a few years.
My name is Andrew, and I am the host of a show called Rage Hunter. And on Rage Hunter, we cover the latest news and what's trending in the gaming industry with just a hint of some sarcasm and rage. You probably have this hole, you know, this void in your life that you don't know how to fill. Well, Rage Hunter is going to fill it. And the best part is we are everywhere. iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Google Play Store, Spotify, Podbean, Instagram, Twitter. So that way, you can get as much rage in your life as possible. And some news while you're at it. So come check us out and be a part of the greatest gaming podcast in the universe. See you there.
That's good. It seems like that's why, I don't know, I'm iffy when it comes to art school. I've known plenty of people actually who went to it. But I am kind of iffy on that, and it kind of gets me frustrated and kind of ticked off when, you know, there's always that mold, and, you know, they're always like, this is the set in stone way, where I'm like, you're full of shit here, buddy, to say it at least, because this Midwestern kid got a bunch of art jobs, and it's like, oh, what the fuck? And there's a few people I know some people say yay, some people say nay on art school because of that, like, little mold thing. What is your kind of position on it? Like, obviously, you're like, no, I'm done, and you're like, it's over with, nay?
Yeah, well, I think that if you can find a school that teaches you the technical skills, not the, you know, not the theory. The theory is bullshit. But if you learn how to paint and you learn how to draw and you look at things without really putting all this other stuff over top of it, I think art school can be really, really important. But if you get caught up in the whole theory side of stuff and you talk more than you actually draw, then it's just, you could just do that at home. You don't need to go to school.
That's true. Okay. All right.
Yeah. So I believe that having a bit of schooling and doing life drawing stuff, like going down to local places and doing life drawing, is really important. But an actual structure of school for 4 years, I don't think is necessary.
So you went on and you were doing your own thing at home. Cause I'm really curious about your story a little bit because you've done some really, really fun work. So I kind of want to know, Like, how did you get started in comics? So you left the art school, you're like...
Comics, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the internet, you know?
Really?
It was one of those things, not to date myself, but it was one of those things where getting online and meeting people was semi-new. So a place like Digital Webbing was pretty much where I hung out. And I would meet people through Digital Webbing, through the website. And, you know, you'd post drawings or people would, you could critique stuff and all that sort of thing. I believe Digital Webbing is still going, actually. Ed's still hosting that, so that's cool.
Is it, though?
I think so.
Okay. Because
he mentioned something, I'm still in touch with Ed. He mentioned they've got a book called Fist of Justice that
he wants
to do more work with. And then he was talking about putting an ad out in Digital Webbing, and I was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, shit, that is pretty. That is pretty damn cool. What the hell?
Yeah, so it was a kind of a really rudimentary way of meeting people, and you know, people of that had a certain interest in the things that you were doing, and you mm-hmm. could kind of create. So it was one of those things where I met a guy named Ken Faggio, and we chatted online, and then we started doing a book called Braids of the Gorgon, which is like this Greek mythology thing, and we did a full issue, and we shopped it around, and no one bit, and then I ended up working with a few other writers and stuff, and then just kind of slowly, you know, it really is all networking. Well, not all networking, but networking is a huge part of this. Mm-hmm. And you work with somebody who works with somebody else who says, oh, I worked with Jason, he'd be perfect for this, and then I would work with that person, then that person would work with someone else who would say, oh, I just worked with Jason, he'd be perfect for that. So it just kind of snowballed, you know, starting with Ken and then doing some work with a few other little guys that I don't even know. A lot of the guys that I worked with didn't end up in comics. And then it was just one of those things where I got recruited by Jason Rodriguez for Josh Fialkoff had a book called Western Terror. I think it was called Western Terror.
Yes, I believe that was the name of it. Yeah.
Yeah, and so Jason Rodriguez was the managing editor. He saw my stuff through Digital Webbing, and was like, oh, you know, you'd be perfect for one of the stories that is in this book. And I think I was in issue 4, and I worked with Stuart Moore. I was just like, what? I get to work with who? It was fantastic. It was a good time, and the story was really fun. And it just kind of grew from there, you know, just kind of like after kind of working with a few people and, you know, Josh going to bat for me with other creators and mm-hmm. that sort of thing. Most of the work that I ever get is from the writers putting my name into a hat. So I've always been eternally grateful to the people that kind of play it forward and kind of help me out.
Yeah, it seems like you're just going, and you have all these people that are helping you out. I mean, obviously your work is really good and you work really hard on it, because otherwise they wouldn't be like, oh, yeah, Jason. They'd be like, oh, Jason, avoid that fucker. No, they're like, hey, come on in. Like, the doors are opening and such. That's cool, though. Like, you're kind of, I don't know how to best to put this. You are like the ace in the hole of people's sleeves that are like, okay, what do we need? Yeah. We need a good artist. Here's Jason. Boom, there you are. And then you appear.
Yeah, I don't know if they needed a good one. They just needed somebody who could probably hit a deadline. that's one of the things that I've always kind of prided myself on. I mean, generally, I might go over, but I'm really good at communicating.
Yeah.
When I'm having problems and stuff. I don't disappear like a lot of artists that, you know, the horror stories that you hear of writers who have put work into this thing and contact this artist and pay them even, and then they get like 3 pages, and then they kind of get another page 2 weeks later, and then
yes.
another page 4 weeks later, and then just nothing.
Yeah.
I'm not like that. Anyone who's ever worked with me knows that as soon as I have a problem, I get on, you know, the email and tell them, you know, I'm going to be a little bit late, that sort of thing. I'm always communicating, but generally I hit my deadlines, and that goes a long way.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you hit the deadlines, because if you don't hit those deadlines, and by the way, I've been at the receiving end of one of those horror stories, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
I think every writer has.
Oh, my God. It was like, just the anger, the disappointment, and the sadness. It's like having a child that, you know, does like this terrible thing. You're like, oh, that's an F on the report card there. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, or it's like, you know, you know the dog, you're supposed to feed it. It ate a cat. So here we are. Like, there's that. And yeah, like, it's really crazy the world we live in. But the deadlines are that thing where you definitely, if you hit them, you are noticed. Because people who avoid or miss the deadlines or like go over it a little bit. Shit, even people who are done before the deadlines. Oh, God, they're angels from above. But, you know, deadlines, if you're making them all the time, those are completely important. I think any artist out there or writer should know that, hey, deadlines are always going to be your best friend. Don't make an enemy out of them. Do them. You're hired to do the job, so do the job.
Yeah, yeah. Editors, that's one of the things that they'll look for. Yeah. One of the major things is that can you hit a deadline? They're okay with it maybe not being your best work, but if you get it on time, but yeah, the deadline thing is something that I think gets glossed over a lot. People think that, you know, I'm really good. Look how swishy my art is. It's fantastic. But you know what? You won't stick around a whole lot if you can't hit deadlines, unless of course you become like this fan favorite that sells a million books, then you can go as slow as you want. But.
Yeah, that seems to be the norm all of a sudden in comics industry, to say the least. Not gonna name names, but.
But you know what, though? When you look at old work, like when you compare old work to new work, there's a lot more drawing in new work. And that's not to, like, put down any of the older stuff, but it's one of those things where it seems like the demand either by the reader or by the artist themselves is that they need to put more in. There needs to be more information. And so the pages just take longer, you know? So
yeah.
The old days where guys could crank out tons of pages, I think those days are gone because there's a certain expectation of what a comic page should look like now. And that takes a lot more work than it used to.
That's true. You're not wrong. I never thought about it like that before. Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
Because there's some guys who put, like, tons of information in.
Yeah.
And there's no way they could do that, you know, quickly. Although, I think, what's his name? I'm going to get it wrong. Jason Barrow?
Yeah.
That does all that crazy, I guess they're horror books, or I guess they would be like that. And the amount of detail, and he apparently can do them. He can do an issue faster than a month. And it's
Jesus
like,
Christ!
What?
Holy hell! See, I always feel bad as a writer doing a lot of stuff in a page, because I really like my artist. Shout out to you, Paul Trinidad, because. Holy shit, I always feel so bad. I'm always like, okay, is this okay? Is this all right? Is this too much wording? Is this, like, too many things in the scene here? Like, I always feel really almost skeptical about it. Like, okay, gonna try to drown it out a little bit here, and they're gonna do this, a little bit less details here, because I don't want to kill, like, it'd be really, really cool if we could do it.
Yeah.
But because of that deadline, because I don't want to, like, make my artist have a stroke, like, Paul, I want you to live, you got a kid. So, you know, like, you know, you got something to live for there. So... You know, we don't really want to do that. And so I always find that that's true. And some artists you do see that are like, okay, I'll do the extra details and one in there too. Those are usually like really, really big companies. But yeah.
Yeah.
Ben, you have been, I want to touch upon it because you have been all over the place in comics industry, to say the least. Because,
have I?
I mean, kind of. Yeah, I would say kind of. You know, like you did, if I remember right, you touched upon Hellboy.
No? I did Daredevil.
You did Daredevil? So someone lied on the internet saying you did Hellboy. So fair enough.
Yeah,
stay warm on that one.
Yeah, no, I've never done Hellboy.
Daredevil I wanted to touch upon a little bit because you did touch upon Daredevil, which is a big name book.
Yeah, that was one of those things where I just happened to know a person who knew a person.
Oh, really? So it was that same effect. It was the Jason effect.
Yeah, and I sadly it was only for one issue, and it was just to kind of help Chris Somni kind of catch up, because he was newly pregnant at that time, or even new fathered.
Yeah.
So I think that was I came in just as a quick fix sort of thing.
Yeah, but that's still like you still get to touch upon it, like even though it's a small thing. Yeah. Yeah, like don't gloss that. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a one in a lifetime sort of thing. Yeah. And I'm always very grateful to Mark Waid for letting me kind of come in on that. That was pretty awesome.
Oh yeah, like that's the thing I think people need to realize. There's a lot of writers and artists out there who I know personally too that are like, man, I only got to do one thing. And it's like, boy, I wish I could get one of those just one things. Are you shitting me? Yeah. Like, come on. It's one of those, there's that, and then there's also the fact of you still have your name in it, you still have that on your, like, resume, you still got to touch in that world. You may just get to dip your toe in there, but you're still tipping your toe in the Lazarus pit here, come on. You know?
Yeah, no, I for sure. I tend to play it down because, you know, it was just the one issue, but yeah, it was fantastic. And, you know, if you told, you know, any age year old Jason before it happened that he would get to draw Daredevil, like he would be over the moon.
Oh God. Yeah. Oh yeah. You would.
It's one of those things though. It's like once you've made a goal, you have to make the next goal. And so then that goal gets diminished because you haven't succeeded in your next goal. So it's one of those things where you can never really be happy with it feels like way in comics anyways. You can never really be, you know, you can't just rest and say, yeah, that was fantastic. You have to be, yeah, well, that was great, but on to the next goal.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
That's kind of why I play it down.
Fair enough. That's a good way to do it. Don't get too hot-headed. Enough, but not too hot-headed. Well, that's fair, though. I mean,
I'm pretty grounded. I'm my worst critic, and really? I'm definitely the person that will let you know just how bad I really am.
You and I relate hard on that shit, my friend, hard on that, because I think that, yeah, but when you are your own worst critic, that makes so much more possibilities, I think, because it kind of motivates you to do better shit and do better in yourself, because you're like, you could do better, or this is trash, let's make something better here, like, okay, let's do this, and you know, then you, or actually, would you want to do this? Are you going to be really good at it? Like, maybe. But then that pushes you to be like, you know what, self? Screw you. I'm going to go for it.
Yeah, it can be a double-edged sword, though.
Yeah.
I have what is pretty much a fact. I have fear of failure.
Really?
So I always feel like the last drawing that I did has to be my best drawing. I'm only as good as my last drawing, let's put it that way. So when I'm drawing and it's crappy, it really hits me hard and it makes me feel crappy. And sometimes that makes me stop.
And
I have to fight that. I fight that all the time because, it's one of those things where it's like, it can stop me in my tracks. If I do 2 days worth of just crap drawings, that's enough to just like derail me. Yeah. So, it's good to be a critic of your own work, but it's bad to be overly critical.
Yeah, it's like you got to find that weird fine balance in it, because that fine balance is going to keep you alive and keep you going. But yeah, if that you let yourself go in, you'll stab yourself right in the heart and be like, oh yeah, the deadline. I didn't do that deadline yet. Oh shit, or anything like that. Like, but apparently that's not your problem. But
well, that's even worse. Is that when you have a deadline and you're not doing your best work, it can really put a strain on you. So that's one reason why I'm doing my own book right now. I'm doing it essentially at my own pace, and it's fantastic because I can work through the problems that I have and make them not problems anymore on my own. I'm on my own, you know, time. So it's one of those things where no one's waiting for me. Well, Troy the letter probably Troy Pateri is gonna do the lettering. He's probably waiting on me, but
yeah, he's like, Jason, where are you? somewhere.
But it's just nice to be able to not have any real constraint, time constraints. So it allows me to do my best work at the pace that it comes at.
Fair enough. I mean, I would have vouched to say you're a very hardworking man in the comics industry, to say the least.
Well, thanks.
I mean, I think it's true.
You doesn't feel that way.
It never, trust me, it never does. People say they love the shit out of my writing, and I'm like, you idiots, it's terrible. Like, hold on here. And they're like, you should go to Netflix. I'm like, fuck no, get out of here. I don't know, well, isn't this your second book that you're working on at the moment that you've done, if I remember correctly?
No, this is the first one that I've ever written myself. So I'm writing and drawing this book.
All by yourself for this new one?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Shit. Okay, that's the difference between Kill All Monsters. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So, because Mike May writes Kill All Monsters, and he's so good at capturing that feel. I think that I would play it much darker, and it wouldn't be this. Definitely wouldn't be the same book.
Fair.
Because my book that I'm working on, Full Tilt, is pretty dark.
I want to say good to that, because we don't often get that many really dark books anymore because they're too afraid to. I think Vertigo closed its doors, and then they're like, DC was like, hey, Black Label. And they're like, oh, Batman's penis. And they're like, oh, hold the fuck on here. Too dark. Scaling it back. Like, wait, what?
And well, there's no frontal nudity on mine, so.
Well, shit, Jason, I'm not going to read it now. No, I'm kidding.
No penises flapping around.
No, that's fine. But, you know, I think we don't really get that many. There's a few out there. There's a really good one I started, and I got to catch up on it, is A Basket Full of Heads.
Okay.
There's that one. Not really dark, but really, like, a more adult/dark saga. And then there's, God, I don't even know what else. The fans are going to yell at me. They're going to be like, you dumbass. There's so many things. That's cool, though. So it's kind of dark. But where do you, like, can you mention anything about it? I know you're still working on it, but, like, what could you tease? Give us a little cock tease.
You know, I've been trying to write, like, a log, like a tag for this book for a long time. And I just can't distill it down into what it is. And I guess that's probably due to my lack of writing skill.
Oh, well, fuck, you're selling yourself really good, Jason.
Yeah, no, this book is something that I've been thinking about for a long time, and it's I would say it's a mix of Blade Runner and The Warriors and The Godfather.
Holy shit. Okay.
Yeah, it's a crime story that's set in the near future that has a protagonist that gets caught in an event.
Yes. I'm like, Jason, don't say anything. I know you're getting stuck in this one.
I just don't know how much to give out these days. Fair. Something happens. You know, it's the one event that happens, and that pushes him into a sort of a race against time, kind of like The Fugitive, sort of, I guess, in terms constantly on the move, trying to outwit people that are coming after him, that sort of thing.
That's cool. I mean, I know that's kind of vague, and fans might say that, but I don't give a shit. That sounds really cool to me. And no blowing smoke, man, because you don't often get stories like that are their own indie thing anymore.
Yeah, no, it's one of those things where I think that it will feel familiar, but I've got a twist in it. That's one reason why I can't really. I have to be careful what I say, because the twist in it that near the end that really sets off everything else, that like you really, oh, okay, I get that. Yeah. Oh, that's why it's happened.
Yeah.
So the beginning is a little bit nebulous, and it's hard to talk about, because if I talk about it too much, then I ruined it. So.
Oh God, dude, you have no idea. I feel that very, very hard, because, you know, writing three different books right now, maybe four soon. Can't say more, but. You know, you want it to people are like, oh my God, this, oh, what is happening here? Like, oh, this is really cool. You know, what's going on with this character? What's happening in the story here? Like, well, what can you tell me about this? It's like, oh my God, I want to tell you everything, but I can't. Fuck. You just want to tell. I think it's a curse of being a writer. So you're like, I have this story. You're really, really, really going to like it, but I can't tell you. Like, what? What are you talking about? Like, just, I can't tell. It's like your secret at the playground. Like, oh, I have a secret to tell you. Oh, yeah, what is it? I can't tell you. Well, right. Fuck you. Like, what are you doing?
Why'd you tell me you had a secret then, you jerk?
Yeah, like, how good, you remember that on the playground? Like, you're just like, no, tell me. And that's basically what it feels like, you know? And that's, I could hear that in your voice as you're telling me this. I'm like,
yeah.
I can't tell.
Yeah.
Hey, folks, Dakota here. And do you guys like Dungeons & Dragons as much as I do? Because if so, you're going to like Adventures in Green and Garb. You know, they're a really fun new group on YouTube, their whole D&D campaign group. But let me tell you what they're all about. Adventures in Green and Garb started, as most D&D campaigns do, around their parents' dinner table. Last year, they decided to bring it to YouTube, though, with the addition of costumes and green screens. Come on, that's adds some really cool flavor right there. Still in the family, their Season 1 campaign is nearing its exciting conclusion, with many mysteries yet to be revealed. They hope you enjoy it as much as they love making it and playing, doing so much with D&D. So smash that like button, subscribe, and share, and look for them at this year's Gen Con. So I'm extremely excited to have these guys a part of the Comic Chronicle and Film World podcast, you know, to partner up and all that such, because they're truly wonderful people, and you guys should go subscribe and support them and give them a like. They're really, really fun. And because we've been playing throughout the commercial, I'm going to play you guys the theme that they have. The first time you're listening to this, you're going to want to go subscribe. And then we'll get right back to the podcast. Thanks, everyone.
Let us roll you a tale where heroes prevail as we wander the blight, prepared for the fight. On the edge of the world, claiming almighty glory, in spite of the cost, love and loss frame our story. We won't turn back now, bloodied by dragons made gory. We roll this tale for you, roll for you.
Banded by fate,
oblivion beware, watch as great fires whirl, lightning crack in the air, olden powers unleash, together taming the beast. We roll this tale for you, roll for you.
Come, then chat along, ye doubting hearts. Stoned and strong, be not afraid. Douse your doubts and join the
moving on, don't quit. Green and Garb won't forfeit. Don't look back, stay alive. Smite them, survive. Keep moving on, don't quit. Green and Garb won't forfeit. Don't look back, stay alive. Smite them, survive.
Steadfast and true,
we surrender our lives to defend all the realm till that good day arrives, when we lay down our swords, bodies scarred and bruised, having rolled a tale for you.
On
the edge of the world, claiming almighty glory, in spite of the cost, love and loss frame our story. We won't turn back now, bloodied by dragons made gory. We roll this tale for you, roll for you.
Yeah, no, but even if, and I'm not saying that it's a bad story, but even if the story fails on some level, or all levels, I think that the art is the strongest thing that I've ever done in my entire career. And
really?
Yeah, it's going to be about 220 pages.
Ooh.
And I'm going to kickstart it, and I'm doing it without a publisher, and I'm doing it all on my own dime and everything. So, but the art is, I don't say this very often, but the art's fantastic. And that's, again, because I get to work at my own pace, and it's my own vision. I don't feel like I have to draw, because sometimes when I work with other people, I feel like I have to draw what I think they are expecting from
me.
Whereas this is just me, and I don't have anyone's expectations that I have to hit. It's just my own. So, so I think that it's led to pages that are ahead and beyond what I've ever done. So.
Really? So this is, I don't know, I kind of find it fascinating to me because, you know, we have these times now where we're doing Kickstarter and you're doing all this, man. Like, my hat's off to you, Jason, because it requires some serious balls these days to go up with that shit, because it really does. Like, you're like Kickstarter, everything else like that. I'm like, oh my God, Jason, I want to get behind this to support you. And I am, don't worry. You're catch a few bucks on me. But, you know, no, it's so difficult to go out there and be like, I'm doing this on my own and not having a publisher. One, there's a little bit of competition. And two, you know, with the market that we're in of everything, like you're getting so much of all this content, you know, it could be extremely tough to do. But you know, like that's why it's extremely difficult. But it seems like you're on a really, really good start with it. And if it's as good as you're saying, which it could be, it could not be, who knows?
Who knows?
I'm feeding into this worst critic of yours.
I know, right? It's infectious. I think that it'll do fine. I am worried, but I'm not that worried.
Oh yeah, well, I'm not saying it's gonna do bad, but I'm saying, you know, it's you have the cojones to go up there, man, and that's why I'm like, oh my god, hats off.
Well, I've backed a lot of stuff on Kickstarter, and so I feel as though I kind of have been in the trenches, even though I've never done. Well, actually, that's a lie. Michael and I kickstarted a Kill a Monster, kind of half of the big book that came out from Dark Horse was already published by Alterna Comics.
Mm-hmm.
That we kickstarted the first 136 pages or something. Jeez. And that made $12,000. So
wow.
Yeah, and it was one of those things where we had no idea that if anyone was going to read it. And then the response was fantastic. And so I know that this book is definitely not Kill on Monsters, but I think that I have a certain, I hate to say it, fan base, people that like my work, that are willing to buy into this one as well. So even though I know that it's a gamble, I do feel that it's not, it's a gamble that I've thought about. It's not some blind leap of faith. I've kind of done a bit of homework on it. So.
Yeah, which you have to, and it's this whole big thing with it. Like, I've had on a few people who have done comic Kickstarters on there before, and yeah, man, like they're all. It's really, really cool to see. You guys are like the biggest and best creators that are doing it, because you're like, I really want to create this thing. I have this here. I want to see it done. Like, where do you go? Like, this comes out, right? It does very well. Where do you go from there? Like, I'm curious. What is future Jason's problems? Or glory? What is...
Well, I think I have actually had a few publishers contact me.
Oh, sure.
About publishing it. But I don't... It's all kind of after the fact, like after the Kickstarter happens, mm-hmm. that they would be interested, and they may change their minds once they read the book.
Oh,
but the idea is that if the Kickstarter is successful enough, that there are publishers like IDW. I'm not saying that they're one of the ones that are asking me, because they're definitely not. But IDW is one of those publishers that looks at Kickstarter work that comes to them
really?
Full. Yeah, and then puts it out, and so the contract, I haven't seen them, but I imagine the contract is like no advance. You're making whatever percentage, 50-50 probably, off of whatever it sells. But there's always a chance to have like that second kick at the can. So you know, you do the Kickstarter, you make a certain amount of money once you pay off everything and you mail it all out and stuff, and then the second kick can be at a publisher that's willing to take it on for minimal risk. Dark Horse actually does that as well. They'll take on stuff that was kickstarted.
Cool.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think that there are avenues after the fact. So my end goal is to finish the book and kickstart it. And then anything that happens after that is just gravy in terms of success or money or whatever. So, I think, it sounds cliche, but the success that I'm really striving for is to finish the book and have a successful Kickstarter. After that, whatever, you know.
Just whatever comes again. It's going back to classic Jason of like, whatever comes, I'll do it, and I got to eat, so it helps.
Yeah, you know what? Those days are kind of over.
Really?
Yeah, Michael and I are going to do another Kill All Monster story.
Oh, shit.
And as far as I know, we'll kickstart that as well. I know that we've done stuff through Dark Horse, but we haven't really discussed with Dark Horse about doing the next one.
Fair enough.
We might just go alone. I don't know. But and then after that, Full Tilt's going to take me about another year to draw.
Really?
And then, yeah, well, because I'm not going very fast.
Oh, well, fair enough. Then, yeah.
and I'm not pushing myself, but I figure by the end of 2020, it'll be done, and then I'll kickstart it in the new year of 21.
Okay.
And then as soon as that book is kickstarted, and I take care of all the things that happen with the Kickstarter, I'll start doing the Kill All Monster book, and then that'll probably take about a year. So I'm already like 2 years down the road. So
Jesus.
Yeah, and I've got other story ideas of my own. So once Kill All Monsters is over, I imagine I'll just roll into another of my own books.
I dig that. What are you doing? So is it like, what are you doing as an artist right now? Is it like, is it a day job sort of thing? Or is it like, I'm just curious, like, what are you doing in the meantime while Full Tilt's going out? I'm like, what are you doing inside?
I've got a very patient wife.
Oh.
Who has a very good job.
Fair enough. So you still got food.
My advice to all artists is to find someone who loves you unconditionally and has a good job.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I am right up front with everything when it comes to terms of that. If Jackie didn't support me in terms of around the house, that sort of thing, financially, there's no way this book would ever happen. And she understands that, and bless her heart, she supports me fully. Because I'll talk about, I added another page today, but because I do that notoriously, I'll turn a one page thing into a two page thing. The book was 100, it was about 170 pages when I wrote it. And now I'm looking at probably about 220 pages. It's done. So,
that's just a little bit of math there. I mean, just a tad bit more pages.
Yeah, so it's going to grow probably close to, by 30% over the original script. So, but again, it was all done to make the story stronger, or to make beats more interesting, mm-hmm. or to really have a high impact double, because I'm doing tons of double pages in this thing. So it's just a way to work with the pacing, to manipulate the pacing and make things happen visually in a way that I want to. There's just no way that I would ever be able to do as many two-page spreads and that sort of thing if I was working with a publisher. I just wouldn't.
Yeah,
wouldn't
no, there's no way. I don't think you can make that type of deadline. That would be killer on you. There's no way in hell with that many. There'd be like, oh, the deadline's this. You're like, well, I guess I'm not seeing the outside of my workshop or wherever it is you work or your office. Or, well, like, do I have a wife? I don't know anymore. It's like, oh.
So, yeah. So when I add a page and then I'm kind of apologetic about it, she's like, "No, if that's what it takes to make the book stronger, then you do that." So that support is amazing.
Man, that's some love right there. Whoa.
Oh, for sure.
As a single guy, somewhat jealous. No. No, but I mean, that's true. You know what, though? That advice there, I've heard it before from people, so you're not alone in saying, like, find someone who loves you. Like, yeah.
It has to be unconditional love, though. Oh.
I think you got to put that one in there. Hold on a minute.
They might love you, but they'll hate you for the fact that you are, dragging your heels on this book that they're supporting you on.
Oh, yeah. You got to take that talking shit.
Yeah, where she's just like, you do what you need to do to make it the best book you can. So.
And when she roasts you, you take it with a stride. You're like, all right.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, man. Well, that's cool.
Yeah, that's the future. That's where I got to a point where I realized that as an artist, being left off of solicitations, like, oh, this is so-and-so's book, like the writer's book. And you're like, well, I actually co-created it with that guy, but, whatever.
Yeah.
It was that sort of stuff that would happen constantly, where the art cred that Declan's always trying to get people, it's one of those things where it's like, if I'm invisible, if I'm doing so much work and I'm still invisible, then I need to change the work that I do. Mm-hmm. So I decided that writing my own story was probably the best way for me to try to change that paradigm and be seen as a creator of something, as opposed to just an artist that was brought on to a project.
Oh, I love that. You're like, okay, We just, like, you wanted to be a little bit more. Like, I really, really, really dig that. That's awesome because, you know, there's a lot of people who are just like, I'm going to stick in my niche. Well, you're like, get out of town. All right, I'll be, like, all right, I want to be more than just the artist on the page, which, I know some people are fine with, some people aren't, but you wanted to go both. And I got, what is that like? Like, because I know we're kind of coming near the end of the show here. So I kind of wanted to ask you, man, like, what is it kind of like being an artist and a writer? And is there any, like, pointers you can give people who are like, I'm going to be my own artist and writer, and people who are trying it right now? Even people who I know who work at big companies are stressed on it. So, like, what could you say about that, man?
Well, I think that every artist, that's too general. I think that a lot of artists should, if they have a story idea, they should fully attempt to write that thing down and get it down on paper. And then when they have a chance to work on it on their own, because the ability to, the freedom of being able to push things around, to move things around without having to worry about feedback or criticism or, you know, every once in a while, if I worked on a book with somebody and I said, wouldn't it be cool if the character did this? And then the writer would be like, nah, I don't think that's cool. That's not what the character would do. And you feel like, oh, well, okay, that's fine. But when you're writing your own book and you decide, oh, wouldn't it be cool if the character could do this? There's no one that can say, no, that wouldn't be cool. And you're like, boom, I'm going to do it. So I think that the level of control that you have when you are drawing your own story is fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's just fantastic. It's definitely not for everyone, especially in terms of the finances.
Yeah.
But it's something that I think that most artists should at least attempt at some point. Not necessarily a 220-page graphic novel. Something small, for sure, is probably a smarter way to go. But I would say for sure that any artist that has a story in the back of their head and has always thought, oh, well, one day I'll get to it. Mm-hmm. Don't wait for that one day. Do it today. Do it right away. Oh, start now. And then in 2 years after you've been pushing it around, you'll have something that you can work on. You know what I mean?
Dude, that's brilliantly put. Like, I couldn't have said it any damn better. Yeah, you're like, oh shit, stress, I'm on the spot. Oh God, what am I going to say? And you're like, oh, okay, no, that's good. It's good shit, Jason, because, you know, you include the details in there of, yeah, it's not for everybody, but you're right, you know, just keep pushing. And the fact is, I like how you put in there 2 years, because, you know, in our type of business, it's never just overnight thing, you know, it's never that at all. Like, shit, I've been on a book now that's supposed to come out a while ago, but, you know, it's been pushed back to, like, the end of this year sort of thing. So I was like, okay, cool. And I've been working on it for a while. So it's like, okay, cool. It's about a year of production right there. That's fine. Whatever. You know, these things do take time.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Yeah, I think that people actually, readers don't realize the amount of time and effort that it takes to make a page happen.
Yeah.
The writing part and the drawing part. When people get down on artists that get behind schedule, I mean, one, they may be off playing PlayStation, but
that seems a little bit too real when you said that, Jason.
But two, I think that the amount of work is like the amount of time that the work takes is underappreciated by a lot of people that read it.
Yeah.
And it's actually pretty disheartening sometimes watching somebody read a book that I've drawn, because they flip so fast and you're just like, you didn't even look at that awesome hand I drew, or you didn't look at that car that I managed to nail. And it can be pretty disheartening.
Yeah, you're like, admire my work, damn it, what are you doing? Like,
slow down, enjoy the art.
And they're like,
enjoy,
I'm waiting for the words. No, read for the art, bitch.
Well, it's weird, because I think a lot of people do read comics for the words, not for the art. But at the same time, they demand a certain level of art that that they don't really read, like they don't look at. I don't. It's kind of a weird thing.
People are weird. People are really weird. Let's be honest here. Yeah, I think, you know, even just with the toxic fandom that we talked about in the beginning of the show, no, people are really, really weird. Us comic fans are so indecisive. I've been a comic book fan for a while, but us comic fans can just be really, really indecisive, like flip of a coin. It's nuts. I love us all, don't get me wrong.
The nice thing is that the majority of creators that do comics are fantastic people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's some of the nicest people I've ever met. So.
And we're the most hustlers, too. I was told that the other day.
We're what? Sorry?
We are apparently, and I'm a guy who works in film, too. And apparently, it was 7 jobs in there, but apparently we are the most hustling of people. And, like, the best creators is comic book writers and artists. I was told this by a fellow creator the other day. I was like, huh, I never thought about it that way. And they're like, yeah, these guys always got to go for the next book. You know, you're hustling for, you know, especially you indie guys. You're showing up. You're hustling. You got to promote yourself all the time. You're doing this stuff. And I'm like, I work in film. I hustle all the time. They're like, yeah, but you don't think about it. Don't you hustle maybe a little bit more in comics than film? Like, oh, shit. Like, yeah, well, yeah, you do.
There's not a real good PR machine set up for comics.
No.
You know, companies, most companies don't even really support the books that they put out. It's weird when you do a book at a company that might do like a banner ad on, you know, CBR or something, and that's the extent of their advertising.
Yeah.
You know, they tweet about it twice and put an ad on CBR or something, and it's just like, well, I could have done that myself. And
yeah.
So I think that's why a lot of people are so vocal about their own work, is that there is no real way to get this information out. Your book goes into a giant catalog called Previews. You know, you've got your 4 square inches of space in that, and if somebody blinks, they'll miss you. So we have to yell at the top of our lungs that we're doing these things.
That's true.
Who else is gonna yell? not the publishers generally.
Yeah, generally. I mean, mine were doing very, very well on it, but I'm lucky with them. I really, really am. You know, not to suck their own dick or anything like that, but I very am lucky to have them. Really, I'm lucky to be
good.
A part of them.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like, they're really good at it. But I agree with you on that. There's books out there that I'm like, why don't they promote this more? It's really good. And like,
yeah, there's tons of books that come out from like companies like IDW or Dark Horse. Books,
yeah.
Like that level of comic book company that just don't seem to put out. Like, the reach just doesn't seem to go out. You never hear about these books. I generally only ever hear about books from other creators.
Yes. There was one, and it got turned in. I waved a flag for this one for so fucking long, Jason, and it's so good. And I was always like, yeah, read it. People were like, pop off. And then it was like never really promoted that much at all. Then it was, and it wasn't. It was Paper Girls.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, and now it's getting turned into a show. And so to everyone who's like, when that news got on, I think Amazon's doing it. When that got announced, people were like, oh, so this is a good book, isn't it? Like, oh, pop off. It's been like, been a whole year of me waving the flag for this. And I put a whole like big thanks to the writer and creator of it, like, or the artist and the creator of it. Like, hey, you guys did a really, really, really good job and stuff like that. And like, people were like, oh yeah, this book exists. Like, oh, you, what? Like,
yeah, well, you know, and there are so many books. There's so many books.
Yes, that's
so many
true.
Books that it's pretty hard to keep track of everything that's going on. So.
Oh, it's true. So we are coming near the end of the show here, Matt. I've kept you here for a little bit of time.
And the worst.
Thank you. So where? I was glad it wasn't. Yeah, I got work to do. What are you doing here? I'm always afraid for that. Oh God. I want to help promote you, man. And so, I mean, you got some really cool things coming out, of course, and whatnot. So people can keep track of projects and whatnot. Where can they follow your social media?
Well, I'm on Twitter, just Jason Copeland. I should mention that Copeland is without an E, Copland, even though it looks like Copland, it's Copeland. So that's just a little, you know, asterisk there. So Twitter, I'm Jason Copeland. Instagram, I'm Jason Copeland. And Facebook, I'm Jason Copeland. I don't know where else I'm at.
I think that's all, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
That's pretty much it. I have a website, jasoncopeland.com.
Ah.
And I have a newsletter that I put out. It's probably about quarterly, about every 3 months, where I give people kind of sneak peeks at Full Tilt, and
ooh,
and I also do a drawing, a random drawing for a little 5x7 drawing that I'll do for somebody. So, and that's free. So it's like one of those things. Every newsletter, I'll randomly select somebody that gets a free drawing. So.
Oh, that's cool. That's really neat, actually. I dig that. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's, you know, one way to give back. Because it's one of those things, again, you know, just trying to cultivate some sort of connection with people. Because the internet's just can be so impersonal sometimes. So.
Yeah, it's very true. Yeah, I'm just like, I've had to do a lot of social media stuff recently, and it's been really disheartening sometimes, because you look upon and you're like, yeah, it's not really that much personal. So I've been trying to add to it a little bit, give my own flavor sort of thing. Really, really try. Yeah. I can't agree anymore on that one. Once you dive into the internet and like social media, you're like, oh dear God, like I'm going to the bar or something like that. You're like, oh Lord. Ugh, nasty place.
Yeah, it can be a grind for sure. Unfortunately, that's the only way to network unless you go to shows.
That's true.
And one of these things about being in Canada is that our dollar isn't worth as much as your American dollar. So going to a show, especially some of these Reed Pop shows that are like 4 days long, to pay for flight, to pay for hotel, to pay for the table space, to pay for food, taxis, whatever, right? It's all in American, so add another 30% on top of that. So Jeez. These trips cost a fortune, and I generally don't make that much money back. So, you know, every show tends to be a loss, so I just kind of stopped doing them.
Fair. I don't blame you on that one because, yeah, I don't really know that many people who leave from Vancouver to go to the States to do shit. I really don't. There's very, very few for that specific reason. You can make some money on it, but it's... yeah, the money, the math is kind of weird on that. And you go, I just be working at home, working on full tilt. It's like, yeah, I'd rather stay at home.
Well, yeah. And taking, you can't take stuff across the border, books and stuff.
Really?
It's really frowned upon. You can't travel with that stuff. So you have to ship it.
Oh, that's just stupid.
Yeah. The U.S. border customs, they believe that when a Canadian comes down with product, that we are taking money away from other American artists.
What?
So, well, because if I bring my book down and you give me $5 and for the book and not $5 to somebody who lives in the States for their book, then you've just taken $5 out of your economy. So... They don't like it when people come down selling stuff.
Oh, that opens up a bucket of worms I don't want to dive into right now. Oh, my God. I've never known this. I know some of you people, not Los Angeles, well, that, but Vancouver. Wow.
Yeah. Huh. So if you do a show, you generally have to, you don't want to cross the border with the stuff, because if you do, then they can either seize it or just turn you around. So then you got to ship it.
Okay.
So you've got shipping costs, and then some hotels cost charge you fees to hold on to stuff too. So,
Well, number 555 of this week of why I'm kind of pissed off at America. Congrats.
It happens everywhere. I'm sure.
Fair, that's true. Well, already, man, I want to say thank you for coming on the show, boss. It has been actually enlightening having you on the show.
Well, I'm thrilled to be here, and I'm really glad that you asked, man.
Yeah, of course. And any final words before I let you go to the folks at home?
Not really. Just, you know, be good to everyone and give somebody a hug.
The most peaceful thing you could have said. And it's like, yep. Fair enough.
Yeah. There's enough hate out there.
Oh, God, yes. So everyone, definitely lately as of this recording. So everyone, thanks for tuning in and stay classy, comic fans.